Yet Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Dr. Ellen Kirschman is with us. Our next guest has been a police psychologist for 30 years, the recipient of the California Psychological Association's Award for Distinguished Contribution to Psychology, as well as the American Psychological Association's Award for Outstanding Contribution to the Practice of Police and Public Safety Psychology. Dr. Kirschman is the author of an award-winning nonfiction, the title is I Love a Cop, What Police Families Need to Know, and Counseling Cops, What Clinicians Need to Know. Her acclaimed mystery fiction series includes Burying Ben, which came out in 2013, The Right Wrong Thing in 2015, and as of July this year, The Fifth Reflection. Dr. Ellen Kirschman on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Hi, Dr. Kirschman. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
You know, I've been asking this question of every expert over the last 48 hours. I think I've been doing the show now 43 years. So I'm starting to conclude we're going to have this. We aren't able to do everything we wish we could do to micromanage and sanitize a society. It was an experiment in 1776 at best. So I guess some people wish we could micromanage the society to the level that we would know about them ahead of time or they wouldn't happen. I'm starting to feel like I don't want to waste my time on that. I think I'm better off going with, can we cope with, this is the price of freedom when you deal with hundreds of millions of self-determined human beings. What's your thought on this?
Well, that's an absolutely huge question. I'm not a philosopher. I deal with the cops and the first responders who show up at these horrific events. And I'm happy to talk about that. But I agree with you. I don't know how we can prevent such things. I mean, we can do a lot better, I do believe, with our gun control laws. But, you know, this guy didn't show any signs ahead of time. So we don't want to lock down society in such a way that none of us feel comfortable walking around. So it's a huge problem.
You know, I was a criminal justice student in the 70s at St. John's and John Jay, and cared a great deal about police psychology. And I wonder if we haven't really overburdened police and said, look, you know, this is a maintenance job. Stay low, shoot them down, but this is not your job. You know, we're not going to make you figure them out, understand them, negotiate with anybody. This is like finding rats in the basement. Sad. We're not happy that human beings have become pestilence. But for the purposes of the sanity of the families that I'm sure over your years, you know, there's not really a big enough vocabulary to articulate their pain, their loss. Because I do see the losses differently. I don't know, you probably struggle academically or at least, you know, professionally to see this in a most dispassionate way. But police are worth more than the people who do yesterday. They just are. As unpopular as that sounds, they're worth so much more. And we got to get with what the real value of humans are, because we've lost the battle of, gee, you know, we're all basically the same. We can get a handle on this if we just have the right social policy. Sounds delusional at this point. But what do you see when you see go ahead.
I'm not sure I'm following everything you're saying. But here's where I do agree with you. We have If there's a social problem, people say the police need to fix it. Police cannot fix poverty. They cannot fix holes in the healthcare system. They cannot fix holes in the mental health care system. They cannot deal with institutional racism, both contemporary and historical, the problems with families coming apart, with school problems. And it all gets laid at the, I mean, it looks like it all gets laid at the feet of police. And they're not trained, they're not capable, they don't have enough resources. So we have some major problems that need to be fixed, and many of our institutions are going to have to work on this, not just the cops.
Right, but I think you've got my question. That's exactly what I'm saying. Shouldn't we take back from them the concern and say, just get them in the crosshairs and take them down? Let others worry. You're there like the exterminator. That's it. We've been playing do you feel how people express this was a terrible game to play for years? It was silly the whole time. Police have been ravaged by doing their job because we've elevated bad guys to be worthy of analysis and causes, and this has punished the police. They should be guilt-free. Yeah. They should be guilt-free, right?
Well, I don't know about that either. I think that police work and law enforcement as we conceive of it is not just fighting criminals. It's also protecting people. It is also keeping people safe and if there's that sort of guardian versus warrior mentality, it's not all just putting bad folks in jail. I mean, that's a huge part of it as well. I think that would be alarming if that's all cops ever did. I mean, what kind of shelf life would you have on the job if that's all you ever did? I mean, I tend to think of cops as being combat social workers. That's what's so complex about their jobs. Now, have we overloaded them with things? Absolutely. But I don't think we want to just take everything other than the enforcement aspects away from law enforcement. I don't think they want that either.
Well, let's agree on what you would take away from them that has been a miserable failure and they shouldn't be bothered with. Is there anything?
Well, I mean, since a lot of crime is associated with poverty, we can't take that. A solution to poverty is not something the police can handle, but they're going to be running into it all the time. So many calls for service and so many shootings involve people who are mentally ill. I think we're doing a lot better trying to train police officers to recognize and deal with mentally ill people. But we need to patch up the holes in the healthcare system and not make our jails and prisons the largest mental hospitals in the universe right now. So we need to relieve them of some of this. But there's no way to relieve them of all of it, realistically, I don't think.
Well, all may not be necessary, but I think if I'm them and I'm listening to them when they call, they're angry.
Yeah.
They are angry at the way society has used them. I don't think they...
And
I would like you to pinpoint what society should stop doing to them in specific so we could hear it said by someone besides them. I'd like someone to speak for them, say, take this off their shoulder, they will be better off without this. What would you point to?
Well, all right, I would shore up the mental health system. I would have mental health working with police right alongside of them so that when you get dispatched, deployed to some call involving a mentally ill person,
right.
And this is happening in some communities, then you've got a trained mental health person, a crisis intervention person there with you on the team. That's one place I think we could help people. I think relieving, that broken windows theory that said for a long time, if a community looks better, and there weren't these minor crimes around, and the community spirit would be better, it would reduce crime, and so cops were then sent to enforce kind of minor stuff like open beer cans in the park or throwing your cigarettes on the sidewalk. They could be relieved of that, and I think that's actually happening now. I mean, that has made the relationship between communities of color in particular and cops very difficult.
This is where we need to go. Exactly. Now, this is where I thought we would go. The difficulty of the racial tension that has been filling the television, the cemeteries, the funeral homes, the sidewalks. The racial violent tension. On one side, we're going to fry them up like pigs in a blanket. On the other side, they're murdering my people. This kind of thing. I wonder, a question is, what does a police officer have to feel is the level of hatred toward them when they're in a community that goes on television hating them, screaming victimhood? How can that person approach that car in a way that, you know, once upon a time, you were reverent of a police officer? You didn't curse and behave. So we did lose what I think used to protect them. And that was the fear of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what now they must think when an unresponsive car on a dark street requires their attention. That to me would be the torment of worst. You look at, you see your little kids, your wife, and you're in, you know, you're like, am I going to die over this?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see in Ferguson, St. Louis, this poison toxicity of Black Lives Matter having ravaged black and white officers. Female is the poor woman there with the, I was afraid of the way he moved, then she's about to get lynched because she overreacted to a bad guy disobeying. So I say, my God, that's got to be terror. To think they're armed and ready to kill you, they run down the street and say they'll kill you, and then one at a time you have to walk up to a car. You know, in my early days, we went on the police ride in the 70s. That was part of my undergrad. I took criminal investigation. We had to go to the morgue, watch them get cut up, and I made a ride at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, even back then, it was palpable. But I worry today, post-Ferguson, you know, Trayvon Martin, this whole crusade of racial anger at the police, can we do anything for them in that in psychological environment? What kind of support system is available for them on that level?
Well, I go around doing lots of workshops about dealing with the current troubled times, because those are hard times to be a cop. There's no question about it. So just trying to give people some ideas about how to keep things in proportion, because there's still a great deal of respect for police officers. There was a Gallup poll recently that that indicated that the respect for police officers has gone up a great deal. But there's a sea change happening in law enforcement, and I think that there is no trust between, or there's a little trust between communities of color and the police department, and that has to be fixed. It is also true that cops are feeling frightened, more frightened than they have been in my 30 years. They're also feeling betrayed by the communities that they go out and serve every single day and feel like the communities are turning on them. And so these are very complex.
I'm so glad
very
you brought
complex
that up.
Issues.
That was my next item right there.
Yes.
The horrible betrayal that the protector is hated by the propaganda of a drunken, drug-addicted sidewalk, all day cursing them as they drive by. Then they have to go help a little old lady and walk by the people who spit on them. And this is, I'm saying, the psychological side of this is pretty astounding, because the media only gives us the snapshots, right? We see them on the worst days, the worst things happen. They're getting out there every other day and they're still doing this, and I don't know if they can feel cared for, appreciated, vindicated, and I'd like them to feel guilt-free. I'm so sick of police answering for their behavior when they mop up the most horrible behavior, and they're always on trial. It's tough. It's very tough. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, one sin is worth a thousand good deeds in police work. There's no question about it. But you know, you're drawing an awfully bright line here between things need to be changed in police work, and I think those of us who support police and have respect for police officers also have to have the courage to call it when something's wrong and needs to be changed as well.
You know, it's true, right? The American system is innocent until proven guilty. I've never seen a police officer presented as innocent on the 5 o'clock news. I do see outcomes that upset people, but I've never seen a clean reporting on innocent until proven guilty. It is really trendy to, we got the bad cop. We're going to sell a lot of papers. We got it's really tough. I admire the work that you do. What's their resources like? If I'm thinking about a precinct, tough day, at the end of the day, do they have a vibrant, well-trained mental health system that they can go into for the hours, days, whatever they need? Or do they get online like everybody else and he'll see you in the middle of next week, try some Klonopin?
No. Well, it depends on what department you're talking about. But most, so again, that will change from department to department. But what they need is a very robust peer support program, number one, because they will talk to each other and confide in each other and take feedback from each other more readily than they do somebody like myself, a trained mental health professional, because for many cops, it's really hard to reach out for help because it means, quote, you're weak. To me, it means you're human. This is the whole reason we wrote the Counseling Cops book, is to try to develop what we call culturally competent therapists, people who understand the culture of policing, why cops do what they do, and how they do it, and the influence of the culture. So you need those specifically trained mental health people who are available, accessible, easily, who have confidential relationships with people, and don't cost an arm and a leg. You need a peer support program, you need a strong chaplaincy program, and you need a program that supports the families who are the sort of unpaid assistants to the police department. And you need a management staff that understands what stress is like and hasn't forgotten what it's like to be out on the street. So there's a whole bunch of components that could be put in place. I think there's a lot more. Just listening to people talk about Las Vegas, they're talking about getting emotional debriefings and follow-up for the officers. So I think since I started in this field 30 years ago, there's a great deal more understanding and acknowledgement and awareness that this job really causes an enormous amount of stress and trauma for many people.
If you were going to change the structure, would we simply maybe add pay? What would we do to say, we know what you're doing out there, this is something we offer you in exchange for now that we really get what the job is asking for? Is that maybe it? Maybe cops ought to be on a regular basis six-figure employees. Your life is on the line. You carry the stress of everything. Is there something structurally that might change the world that they live in?
Well, here's a couple of things I can think of. There is a movement afoot now to get officers to have yearly mental health checkups that are totally confidential. They select the shrink, they talk, and it's just like, you know, going to the dentist and getting your teeth checked once or twice a year. That there are many people who feel that would be very helpful in spotting problems early on. So that's item number one. Item number two is just, this is from my own personal observation, Well, there's three items here, actually. Item number two would be the way we evaluate police officers and their productivity drives officers to have hash marks to show that they're not sleeping under the bridge. So you can't prove a negative. If somebody is really policing their beat and has good relationships and there is no crime there, how do they account for their time? So the ways in which we evaluate officers and their activities can push people into doing things that only to show that they've been active. I think we need to change that system. And then my third point is we really have to change the way we train officers to begin with. I think we train officers to be frightened of the people that they're policing. Here's the combat social worker thing back again. I used to scuba dive, right? So I was told every time I was learning to scuba dive that I was going to kill myself if I wasn't attentive to my equipment and what was going on around me.
Mm-hmm.
So an officer has to be ready to use physical force to protect herself or himself in a job that's about 10% physical, by the way. But they also have to have all of these other skills, the ability to communicate and to articulate, the ability to express compassion and understanding for people, the ability to make decisions quick. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that they need to be trained. And the bulk of the training turns out to be scaring the cops themselves. We don't need cops to have this we-they mentality that you mentioned. Coming from the Black Lives Matter, it comes.
Yeah,
from both
we
sides.
Do. I mean, you need an authority. It's not. It shouldn't be negotiable. It shouldn't. The police, when we were kids, and we had gunfire and we had heroin in the early '60s in my neighborhood, they had big issues that they had to look
right.
after. But they were feared. And they were nice because that's what they wanted. If you were like, yes, officer, you wouldn't get a crossword. But if it was like, what? And he heard you say what? That's the beginning of it right there. So they had physical control. They walked that street so that people, you know, it's an old story. The little old ladies loved him. Everybody had a cookie for that cop. Because
right.
his mere presence said to bad guys, I will beat your ass if you try anything on the street. Not I'm here, I'm the law. I will beat your ass hard right now if you look. And I'm telling you, it kept the Bronx safer. And this is what I feel they don't have today that they should be given. They should be given more alpha authority. They should be
I would disagree.
Yeah.
I would
right.
disagree with you on that.
Right.
Authority doesn't necessarily come from your ability to be aggressive. Authority can come from the fact that you are knowledgeable, that you are calm and steady, that you authority is both vested in you and it's something that that your personality can project for people. So, no, I don't want cops to be, like in St. Louis, I heard the other night
right.
that the cops were walking around, the chief encouraged them to do this, to walk around the street yelling, the street is ours, the night is ours. I'm probably not saying that right. Sounds terrible. Sounds like a gang of thugs doing that. Cops work for the community.
They are, though, up against bad people. That's the thing. That, you know, nothing, by the way, I don't think we disagree on too much. All I'm saying is, I don't think that's the only place that you get effectiveness, but it was a really effective tool that this was authority arriving at the curb. You lowered your voice when they got there because.
Right.
Well, today, I don't have to tell you, it breaks my heart. I look at them as kids, the young cops, and I say I would never let my son or daughter put themselves in harm's way like that. If you want to mm-hmm. arm them up and have them subdue lawbreakers, I think that's beautiful. I think that is really the true calling of the law enforcement. But it kills me to see how they're treated and that somehow there's a dialogue with that screaming mob. I my heart breaks for them. You know, we treasure our country.
You were asking what we could do. One of the things that I do in these workshops I give about getting through these difficult times is to tell people to also look for the positive things they're getting from the community, not just the examples you're giving. There's a whole bunch of very positive things that are happening, and police routinely have underestimated the kind of respect there is for them.
Well, if you want to have a police appreciation day, you're not going to find that many that'll block you that day. You won't find the calendar full of them. If somebody in some real tough community wants to come out after Ferguson and say, you know, we really appreciate you, but I've never seen once. I don't ever see it. And we want it. I say we. You know, people feel for these cops. So I don't get it. Why do they get zero appreciation, but they're always learning more about lawbreakers? When are the good people in these neighborhoods going to walk down there and say, I would like to say out loud, you are somebody? Because the other way around is always there. It's so easy to get a crowd to start screaming at them. I'm so glad you do what you do, because I want to believe that there is a psychological support system for them, because I think they're the most victimized public servants ever. In the last
I think that they are definitely people in great need, and a lot is being done for them. You know, there's about several hundred of us that do this and nothing else. We have retreats for cops and first responders who have been through work-related trauma. We have various psychological techniques to help people get through trauma. I mean, we are understanding now, lots of people are understanding now, that this job comes along with trauma. Whether you were directly involved yourself or you got there 10 minutes after this happened, whatever it was, that you have been exposed to something most people will never see in their lifetimes.
Dr. Hirschman, thank you so much, not just for the visit, but for your career, for having this passion and dedication to these men and women. It's really a great honor to talk with you about this, because it really gets short shrift in the kind of maelstrom media that we do today. Everything is boom, 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 boom. This will be forgotten in a week or so. Yeah. Thank you for going into a little bit of depth with us, answering these questions.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest. I appreciate it.
You bet. Dr. Ellen Kirschman on the Ed Till Show. Go to www.ellenkirschman, KIRSCHMAN, ellenkirschman.com. Our guest is the author of the award-winning nonfiction series, including I Love a Cop, What Police Families Need to Know, and Counseling Cops, What Clinicians Need to Know. She's also written a fiction series. I love a guest who knows and shares with us. We're so grateful to Dr. Ellen Kirschman, PhD on the Ed Till Show, StarCom Radio Network.